What's going on, everybody? Welcome back. News of my fiance.
Another Thursday.
It's another Thursday. Another great Thursday. We're just getting started. I already know it's going to be great.
I love the attitude, the optimism. I'm here for it. Folks, we had another night of hardly sleeping. So, good luck.
There's a lot happening, man. A lot going on, man. We're still trying to, catch up.
Yeah.
Man.
Feeling very behind right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm doing a better job about not being so stressed out about that I like freeze and don't get stuff done.
Yeah.
So I'm, patting myself on the back for that.
I understand.
For sure.
I understand the freeze. Like when you feel like you're so behind, you're so, up to your neck in it. It's just like, and what's the point? I'm just going to stop here and just.
It's not even a what's the point. It's more of a true freeze of like I get so overwhelmed in the list of things to do.
Mm.
It's more like not what's the point, but where do you start? Mm. And then at some point it's how do you start? Because I'm never going to get it done. This stuff isn't going to get finished.
Right.
It does get finished, but Morgan's been missing a lot of deadlines.
Yeah.
Been doing great this week though.
Yeah. I hope this is helpful to you guys. I'm sure. You can relate to some of this here, especially with everyone working from home. Not everyone, but the majority of people, haven't returned to the office yet, which is a great thing. Shout out, Rudo, what's good?
Stay home. Stay home if you can.
Stay home, sir.
Stay home if you can.
Yeah, yeah. You are, you know what? You're working from home. You are productive. Your work matters. Doesn't matter if you're wearing your jam jams.
They're so comfy.
And if you're taking PS4 breaks.
It's true. Sometimes you need a PS4 break.
Hey, you just might end up being more productive from home.
I do think I'm more productive from home.
Mm, I see it.
Oh, hey.
Peak level productivity.
Okay.
You'd be grinding it out.
Now he's just trying to make me look good on the radio.
Wow.
And I appreciate it. United Front. Team us.
Listen, man. If you could make someone look good on the radio.
I like where you're going.
You know what I'm saying? How much work am I really doing? You woke up like this.
I did.
All right. It's enough witty banter from us.
Mm. Well, top of the morning to the listeners there.
Yes.
I would like to see some... It's funny that I say this, like, send us text messages. I want to see them, and I cannot see them at all. I don't know when they start rolling in. But, yeah, give us a shout.
Yes, we appreciate it every single week. All right, so in some national stories, Canada is to ban foreigners from buying homes as the prices there soar.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And Massachusetts parents sue a school saying officials encourage children to use new names and pronouns without consent.
Consent from the parents? I just want to make sure I understand this. So, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Mm-hmm. In local news, downtown property owners, developers, are bankrolling the big money push to defeat Joanne Hardesty and reelect Dan Ryan in the city council race.
Mm.
The FBI warns of a rise in sextortion crimes targeting teen boys. I'm putting my hands on my hips here.
Yikes.
And Oregon Governor Kate Brown signs farm worker overtime pay bill.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got Alex. She's back.
Alex is back.
With all the famous at 8:45.
Yes.
Will be joining us to talk about the Washington County DA race and what's going on over there.
It's pretty spicy, and Portland is the target.
Well, from what I'm understanding, nobody in Washington County will hear this, so it'll be interesting to talk about them behind their backs.
Oh, goodness. Bruh. But yeah, that is what we're going to be chopping it up over today. Really excited about today's show. I'm really excited to, kick the raps, the old school raps with Alex. These are diss records that are coming out, man.
They are diss records.
Like, yeah.
I'm excited to talk to Alex, too. It's funny because we used her reporting last week to really have her on the show anyway. But she's just able to illuminate so much. So I'm really excited to hear about this story because I read it on Twitter yesterday and was like, yeah, this is spicy. This is spicy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Canada has voted to ban foreigners from buying homes as their prices soar.
Mm-hmm.
Canada has one of the world's most expensive housing markets. Krista Friedland, Canada's finance minister, proposed a new budget that includes a measure that would ban most foreigners from buying homes for 2 years. The effort is meant to bring the market under control. In the past 2 years, home prices have jumped over 50%.
Mm.
Experts say that it likely won't reduce prices immediately, but it will take away some of the competition.
Mm.
The issue, they say, is more a lack of supply of housing. The budget also would add several billion dollars meant to fund affordable housing and would include legislation that would help younger Canadians save money for down payments. So one of the other things that I read about this was mm-hmm. that this is really trying to stop foreign investors from just snatching up all of the property.
Like developers and stuff?
Right.
Okay.
You know how... was it Zillow? Who was it that
was
Zillow. Doing all of mm-hmm. the... We're gonna buy that. We're gonna show you where you can buy a house, and then we're gonna buy that house,
yeah.
and then sell it to you.
Yeah, it was Zillow.
Yeah, I think that is happening, and you know, BlackRock is also doing that. They own like so much of the. Is it BlackRock? Yeah,
it sounds about right. It sounds like a name you've mentioned before.
The you know. Birth from the Halliburton era.
I was going to ask, is that Blackwater? Is that, you
Blackwater,
know?
That's the name. That's it, actually, right?
But it can't be the same firm. The same firm that had the military contracts is now buying? Oh, wow.
I'm pretty sure. I'm also going to the internet to make sure that I'm correct.
So here's the thing. I think there were two blacks. There was like Blackwater.
Sorry.
Besides us. There was like Blackwater. But then they flipped the name like after a couple of years to pick up another contract. And I can't remember what the second firm was. But it was like you guys didn't even try to hide that you're the same people.
Yeah.
It was like Blackwater, Black Fern. Okay.
Black Fern.
Like what are we doing?
Well, now here? I feel like I'm spreading misinformation. I'll figure this out on the break. but yeah, I think this is the kind of thing that's tricky. Mm. I believe there is some sort, you know, what's it called? Sort of like safeguards. If somebody is, if you are not an investor and you're not coming in with your millions of dollars and then buying a house for, you know, 80% over asking with cash and all of that,
oh,
like,
my goodness.
But the point is to really be locking out investors.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
If that's going to work.
That's going to happen. I do like the idea of trying to find ways to cool the market. Mm-hmm. I don't know enough about real estate and, you know, the arbitrary ways that things just are all of a sudden mm-hmm. so expensive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because we keep hearing about, you know, like the shortage of, and there are, you know, a finite amount of single family homes.
Sure.
Or,
yes. Absolutely.
But.
Go ahead.
It's just, I mean, in this system, in late stage capitalism, there's just like, it's every person for themselves kind of thing. Right. And so if you are able to, if you are making, like, one of the problems right now is that there are a lot of people working from remotely,
mm-hmm.
Getting really big city checks, mm-hmm. right? And then moving to cities where it does not at all cost as much to live. Their pay is still at a big city rate, so
right.
to speak.
Right.
And then if you're living somewhere where you can go there and offer so much more over the asking price of a house and, you know, shoot those prices up,
mm-hmm.
that value, I guess. That's another problem. Like the houses that are here are being purchased so fast and for so much more than they're technically worth. It just, you know, prices everybody out.
Yeah. Yeah.
The folks that have lived there forever, that want to be there, that want to stay invested in their communities. And I mean, you know, I'm from here. I have been watching gentrification happen since the 90s. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that that was the word for it in the 90s. But it's interesting to see other places talking about it now. Like, I'm sure things were happening there, too.
Right, right.
And when I say there, I mean around the country. But to hear about it so much now and to talk about it so much now as displacement, which it absolutely is, mm-hmm. but not finding ways to stop it, mm-hmm. you know, like mm-hmm. it's been happening here for a very long time and just not seeing enough action on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then watching, like, in the last 10 years, just the whole developer boom of, oh yeah, we're gonna take that neighborhood's mine now.
Right.
I'm just gonna do that.
And at the same time, the steady swell of our houselessness issue, you know, coupled with that. Excuse me. I didn't really, like, on the surface, this was like, okay, great, this is awesome. But just hearing you, you know, chop it up and chew it up a little bit just now. An easy loophole for me would be if I am one of these big developers, you just find a local firm to work through to make the same purchases.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I wonder how much regulation is going to be involved with this and how long, like, they're saying they're trying to do this for 2 years, but how long until it somehow gets dismantled? And is it, you know, like, what? There has to be right now, just with the announcement of it, a faction of people that are like, oh, we just won't stand for it. And what are those movements look like right now? Like, you know, what are their tendrils up to?
Yeah.
Greed and more greed. It's really discouraging, man.
It's discouraging to. This is housing. And it's becoming so like a moral failure if you're unable to buy a house of some sort, you know, like, and it's just interesting to me how easily people are dismissive of mm-hmm. all of the systems in place to make it hard for other people to buy homes, and how I won't say easy, but how the scales are tipped for certain people to be able to buy homes.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I just don't understand why we, even if you were the person who was receiving the, you know, tipped scale, that's the kind of thing that I would be like, wait, I don't think I should get this. I don't think we should, wait, why do we, and then they don't even get a shot at it.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem right, you know? And I realize that that's a, you know, not the common thought, but.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like housing really is a human right. No one asks to be born, right? You're just, I should be able to live somewhere and not have to worry about spending every single cent that I make
to stay there. Over your head. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyone out there believe that housing isn't a human right? I'm curious.
I mean, yes. The answer is yes.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people that believe it is not. I mean, just like healthcare, just like, you know, education. Like, these are not things that, if it costs money, there are factions of people that believe that, you know, you better bootstrap that. But what do you mean your parents aren't giving you money for a down payment?
That's just so odd. And I don't mean odd in occurrence, but it's such an odd viewpoint that in your mind, there are supposed to be houseless people. You know what I'm saying? If you feel like it's not a human right, and it's like, hey, well, you know what? Some wins, there's some winners and some losers. In housing?
In
healthcare? That's how you've chalked it up?
But that's the thing. In order for it to work, you have to convince people that there are different classes, and in order for you to be a, you know, not a moral failure, or for you to be the, you know, to get to the middle class, like, you have to believe that those people, so lightweight, deserve it.
Yeah.
You know, this is of their fault. This is, had you had only just gone out and gotten a job, how dare you have children and sleep in a car? You know, they make it a moral failure, and you have to. That is capitalism. That is what, in order for it to keep going in the way that it goes, it's the same as, you know, I'm sure listeners are so tired of me saying this, but It is the same as white supremacy. It is the same as patriarchy. It is the air that we breathe. So it isn't that odd, actually, for people to feel like that if you're houseless, that's your fault. Mm. Or that it isn't a human right to have housing. Because our system says it's not. Our system says, go work and then spend your money on your housing. Spend your money on your health care. That's not weird.
Right.
I mean, that is, tying your healthcare to employment is one of the biggest scams that have ever been able to be, like,
yeah,
completely, you know, like, there are people who work 3 part-time jobs in order to make it. And that means they don't qualify for healthcare at any of their jobs.
So then they got to pay for it.
So then they have to pay for healthcare out of pocket, which they don't make enough money to do, right? And you make too much money, and big, huge air quotes on that, but too much money to have any sort of state assistance when it comes to healthcare. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you just don't go to the doctor then. You'll be all right. Or you should have had a full-time job. Or you should have done, you know, like, it's this, we're going to keep moving the goalposts. We're going to keep changing the way that it works. So for folks who have worked part-time jobs and have not been able to get health care, they finally get a full-time job. They're able to get access to health care now.
Right.
Because so many of these employers are like, man, I can't afford to keep paying all of this. So I'm going to pass that on to the employee. So now, as the employee, you are also paying $100 or some, you know, whatever dollars, yeah, every paycheck, to have access to healthcare that then once you need to go to the doctor, they may deny you from even covering what you need to be seen for. It is a scam.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it makes tons of money and it leaves so many people destitute, and it's normal. It is not odd for so many people to be like, of course you have to have a full-time job to have healthcare. But like, as soon as you lose that full-time job, if you lose that full-time job, and you don't have health care, your idea will absolutely change on that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, you and I have talked about so many, how come people just don't see it this way?
Right.
And, you know, just a constant reminder that these systems are in place for a reason. So, much like when, you know, someone will say to me, you make everything about race. And I'm like, because it is. Like, everything is. And it is all the time.
Yeah.
It isn't hard for me to recognize that, but it is very hard for people who do not feel any effects of racism to feel.
Right.
So right. Same thing when it comes to housing, same thing when it comes to sexism, same thing when it comes to, you know, like, all of the things. If you're not impacted by it, And you have no reason to really be opening your mind to it and trying to find out why these systems work the way they do and know how detrimental they are to other groups of people, then yeah, it's real easy to just be like, just go buy a house. Borrow the money from your...
Just go do it.
Yeah.
Just get it done.
Just borrow the money.
Mm. Well, we got a text. Not to change the subject, but it definitely doesn't fall far from the rental crisis.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Hard agree.
Yeah.
And I mean, purposeful.
Right.
When you can make, I mean, I don't, I, this is not what we were supposed to be doing, but
it's the news.
When the first apartment that I rented was a 2-bedroom, one bath, it was a house that was converted to a 4-plex, and I had the top part of the house. Mm. $700 in 2003, I think that was the year.
You said 2-bedroom, 1-bath?
2-bedroom, 1-bath on 17th and Widler. Like, I'm in my neighborhood. I get to do things very easily. And
was that
by
Safeway
the time
always
I left
there?
It, what?
Was that Safeway always there?
Oh, on 11th? Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, as far as I can remember, yeah. By the time I left that apartment 3.5 years, 4 years later, whatever it was, my rent was $750. It is laughable to think. I mean, people are paying $750 for a bedroom right now.
Yeah. Not even a studio apartment.
A bedroom in a two-bedroom apartment. Right. You know, studios were like $400 or $500.
Right.
And that's like all around the city. That's not just, you know, in the scary building downtown. It's like everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that that's a long time ago. And I understand that everything, you know, prices go up and blah, blah, blah. But there is the way that housing works right now and the way that it is legitimately just demand pricing, and that we have been able to base so many of our necessities on demand pricing, is really what, like, that should radicalize all of us. Yeah. That should really make all of us go, wait, this doesn't really make sense, does
right.
it?
Right. Who's supposed to live in these places? Wages are not going up.
Wages aren't going up.
The gap between employees and employers is exponentially growing. Who is supposed to be able to afford these places?
I don't know. And when you have employers that are banking on the fact that you don't make enough money to live, and that you're going to be so desperate that you have to work for less money than you deserve.
Yep.
We're just in a tight spot.
Yeah. Yeah, we are.
I still just can't. I'm sorry. I wanted to finish this one point about how rent just keeps going up, but nothing changes to these places, right? Like when you're living right. in an apartment or a house that you rent, especially when it's like a larger property management place that has many properties to pay attention to, lots of different owners, all of that stuff, right? They don't upgrade. They no. don't come through and change no. the things that now make your rent be $200 more. Nothing has happened. This house is the same. My neighborhood's worse. All of this stuff, my appliances are falling apart. Yeah. And you're like, yeah, we're going to raise that rent. For what?
Right.
For what? It's just, I mean, I don't even understand how I don't understand how they do it. Slimy.
Let me ask you this. If you were getting upgrades, like in-app purchases. If it was like, okay, so next year, the notice goes out next year, across the board, everyone's rent's going up $200. And as a result of that, these are the upgrades available. You can pick from this menu, a la carte. Do you want that $200 to be applied to new appliances, patio furniture? Like, if there were things that...
No.
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 Nothing. I mean, here's
this
the thing.
What my rent's already going to?
What?
Maintaining that property. I am paying your mortgage,
okay.
and you should be maintaining this property.
But at some point, just in keeping up with technology,
mm-hmm.
things need upgrades, like
yes.
actual upgrades.
Yes,
so
and
you're
that's
saying
why I pay you more than what the...
It's already baked into the case.
Yeah, I'm gotcha. Already... If you don't know how to manage your buckets of money, maybe landlording isn't for you. But you should not get $2,000 for rent from one unit.
Right.
And then tell me you don't have money to do the upgrade.
Yeah.
You don't have money to maintain your own property. I'm paying for it.
I know you have the money.
The money's got to be somewhere. If you went in, if you ain't liquid right now and you went and threw it in some sort of crypto situation, on you, bro, not on me. But also, I don't own this property. So it is not on me
yeah.
to then choose which upgrades and all it. Like, no, absolutely not. I'm already paying you enough for you to be able to maintain this property. If you don't maintain that property, that again is on you.
Yeah.
If you can't manage that money, if you have decided to be a slumlord, if that is what you, that's on you.
Yeah.
But no, you shouldn't get to come to me and be like, well, now it's time to do some renovating and gonna pass that right on to you. I'm sorry, I've been paying you over what this housing is worth for how long? Right? Like, you can't actually justify to me paying $2,000 or close to $2,000 for rent for a two bedroom anything. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you and tell me that you can't fix the floor or take 3 months to fix the dryer. You don't get to do that. Mm. You are robbing me already.
Yeah.
Come fix the things.
Yeah.
And if you want this house to be something that is livable for the next person, You have to make, you got to make some upgrades.
Yeah. It's an investment in your own property.
Yeah, that's your property. Yeah. You don't get to pass that on to me and then pass it on to me again. I'm already paying all your things.
You got a text. I make $31 an hour and it's not enough to live comfortably.
You're damn right it's not enough.
Wow.
I'm sorry. You're right. And I'm sorry. Because that absolutely does not make any sense. The minimum wage. There are, like, think about how big of a difference it is between minimum wage and $31 an hour.
Right.
And at $31 an hour, as a single, like, I'm not trying to make assumptions. I'm saying when I made $31 an hour, it wasn't enough for me to live comfortably as just me.
Mm-hmm.
So as a single person who can't live comfortably, and I'm not talking, being ostentatious, I'm talking comfortable, not worried about being able to pay the bills. Able to maybe go out and have dinner with your friends.
Right.
I'm not talking about getting on a private jet. You know what I mean? Like, comfortably. I want to be able to know that my cell phone bill can be paid and I can also eat lunch.
I want to put it on auto pay.
I want to put it on auto pay. I want to save that $10 a month. But you know what? I'm uncomfortable doing that because I'm unsure.
Auto pay is scary, fam.
Yeah.
Those text messages. Thank you for your payment. Wait a minute.
Excuse me? Did I? What?
Ma'am or sir?
Did I say yes to this? Oh my God, I said yes to this.
What is this?
Yeah, I remember accidentally... Many, many, many years ago when I was living in Texas, I accidentally checked the auto pay box,
mm-hmm.
but the way that they set that up was it looked like I thought I was clicking the terms of service or whatever.
Okay.
Tricky dance move they did there.
Smooth moves.
And when that, so I had no idea that I signed up for it. So I paid my bill. And then money came out for a bill. And I was like, whoa.
Slow down. Wait a minute. I'm not trying to get it a month ahead.
What's this double pay?
Uninterested.
Big time uninterested.
Yikes.
And it's amazing how they're always able to take your money immediately, but then it's 7 to 10 business days for that to find its way back to your bank account. Like, oh, yeah, okay. That also happened to me with rent here once. Like, I was super pumped to be able to pay rent online, and then they took it twice. And I was like, fam, there is...
No way that works for me.
Absolutely no way that I can pay rent twice.
I am not falling, fam.
Run me my bread.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I'm out of gas. Great.
Nebraska makes a fantastic point. And this can push people into living or staying in unsafe situations just to be able to share rent with someone because they can't afford housing alone. Ding, ding, ding. You got nowhere to go. You're in a situation that's unsafe. You have to prioritize the housing, right? Because it's not a human right.
Right.
No one's going to help you out here. And depending on what the unsafe situation is, that may not even be something considered unsafe to... people that would be able to otherwise help.
How about that?
I don't know what's going on, but the lights are flickering. Monitors are going crazy in here.
Yeah. A little haywire.
We watch a little too many scary movies for me to believe that this isn't something.
Well, you know what?
Music break.
I was going to say, I'm not scared. I ain't afraid of no ghosts. Huh? Are you? I'm not.
I'm scared of kid ghosts.
Nebraska, it's not a joke.
That's what I'm scared of.
Morgan is not like children as ghosts.
Nope.
It's just not a, it's
the
not
adults
a cool
I can handle, the monsters I can handle. Children? Nope.
Yeah.
Why are you standing over there staring at me? No.
What was that? Insidious, right? The first one?
Oh, man. Kid is just staring or standing in the facing corner. The wall. No, I'm out. It's really what's to blame. We're not doing any of the news right now.
Well, this is news to me.
What's to blame for my I'm scared of kid ghosts is the movie Flatliners. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Oh, the original.
The original Flatliners. There was, I can't remember whose, situation it was, but there was a kid named Billy, what I remember, red sweatshirt, running around chasing everybody. And
okay.
Can't do it. Won't do it. Don't want it. Burned in the psyche.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. And then if there's, yeah, if there's kid goes, I'm just pretty much out. I'm
down
just
gonna
close my eyes on that one.
Did you want me to jump into this?
Do you, boo.
Massachusetts parents sue school. They say officials encourage children to use new names and pronouns without consent. Come on. I want to say get it together, Massachusetts, but that's weird to say. In Massachusetts, two parents are taking the lead of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. I was going to say Don DeRantis. Okay.
Well, that might as well. Alter ego. Steven, alter ego for Ron.
Steven Foot and Marissa Silvestri claim in a new lawsuit that a teacher at their child's school encouraged the student to adopt a new name and different gendered pronouns. Two other parents are also involved in the suit and allege that the school is violating their parental and religious rights. The lawsuit comes as states like Florida are making it more and more difficult for children to receive education on gender and sexual identities. The case is set to go to federal court. I mean,
I got a lot to say.
Yeah. What's the motivation here? Is it to set a precedent, or do you just want to be heard?
No, the major concern here is to concern troll. That's it.
Yeah. Okay.
This isn't a thing.
Is your kid damaged as a, I don't understand.
Well, let's think about it this way. If you have incredibly conservative parents and you are trans or non-binary, mm-hmm. and you feel safe speaking to a teacher, you feel safe speaking to people at school, but you do not feel safe to talk to your parents. I can see parents being very upset that their children are talking to someone else about things that are big to their lives like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I can also see a teacher being like, you're safe here. You know, we'll use the pronouns that you want. We'll whatever it is that you need. And that being a problem for parents, because parents don't want, not all parents, obviously, mm-hmm. but these particular parents do not want the freedom, their children to have the freedom that they so much talk about, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the freedom exists only for them to be able to control someone else. That's the freedom they want. They're not fighting for a world where their children get to have freedom.
Right. Right, 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 right.
And the freedom to be who they are, the freedom to decide not to be religious, the freedom to be able to live in who they are at all times out loud and not have to be quiet about mm-hmm. it. They don't want that freedom. That's not what they want for their children. So when you hear those parents say, you're taking away my choice as a parent, or you're messing with, you know, my freedoms as a parent. No. Because what you're trying to do is control someone else, and that is not freedom.
You're erasing my freedom to suppress.
Yes. Thank you, Nebraska. Nebraska says, if I remember correctly, the child first told their teachers they were queer, and the parents said they were going to put their child in mental health counseling.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds kind of like conversion therapy to me, which hard agree on that.
Yeah.
So why would the child then tell them that they were exploring their gender? You wouldn't.
No.
And if you feel safe talking to someone else, then you should, you know, and you should be able to talk to that other person at school and not feel and not be outed to your parents because you are already knowing that it's unsafe for you to do that. It's unsafe for you to have that conversation with your parents. This is not changing anything. This isn't indoctrinating. This isn't, you know, like, it's supporting the child that is coming to you. And it's wild to me that the idea of these parents who, again, freedom, 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 keep saying, you're taking away, you know, like, my rights as a parent, And if your rights as a parent is to be abusive to your children, then yeah, I want to take those rights away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Goodbye to those.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Because your kids don't feel safe talking to you, and for good reason, obviously, because you're going to tell them that they have a mental health illness because of who you're attracted to or how you feel about your own body. These are people who can't figure out that, you know, gender and sexuality are two different things.
Right.
They can't figure that out.
Right.
So you're unqualified to have this conversation in the first place, is the way that I look at it.
Right.
If you're going to, any sort of like, and if you don't get it and you're not the parent that's like, I need to understand this. I got to figure this out. I need to know what's going on with my kid.
Right.
These are things I didn't know. And back in my day, we didn't need to know these things. If you're not willing to get in and learn, you are not, you're not supportive. You're not as loving. You're not all the things that you think you are to your children. You just want to control them.
You really do yourself as a disservice as a parent to want to be so controlling and boxing your children into the upbringing that you had. Like, I remember having a conversation with a homie of mine, an acquaintance of mine, that was about to have a child, and they were like, you know, so you've got kids. And it's always funny when people are about to have children, like, well, you got kids, so you're a pro. No. Having children doesn't necessarily make you a pro. But he was like,
you might be a pro at changing some diapers.
Right.
But.
So it was like, you know, you got kids. You got any advice for me? And immediately, it didn't even take me a second. It was like, get this Dr. Spock book. There wasn't any of that. It was, your children will teach you how to raise them.
Mm.
All you really got to do is listen, pay attention, like give them every opportunity to express themselves, and they will show you the environment that they need to be in. And to be able to look at your child and you're learning from them because they're expressing themselves in ways that are unfamiliar to you.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you tamp down on that? Like, to me, like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's so dope. That's quite the adventure. And then you have multiple children. Now you're being taken on different adventures in so many different directions. Like, that's one of the most beautiful things about parenting. And now you're like, I don't like what I'm seeing here. Let's reel it in.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's do something a little bit more, quote unquote, normal, what I'm used to. Boring.
Super boring. Super harmful. this is not a part of our story, but I just want to throw in really fast that recently PPS sent out an email that was like, hey, we're making sure that there are menstrual products in all bathrooms. And it's a phased situation. We're going all girls, then all genders, and then we'll get to the boys. And I saw a lot of people lose their minds about there being, you know, pads and tampons in a boy's bathroom.
Thank you for bringing this up. I'm so happy.
And the thing that was illuminating is all of these folks that are very upset, like my boys are going to be confused, and why would they be in there? And they don't have anything to do with that, and on and on. This is, you know, pushing some sort of agenda on young straight boys.
Right.
All of the quotes, because what? The self-report there to me is how you're actually raising your boys, right? And what it means for those young boys to become men. And I don't have a son that I'm, you know, but I would want my son to get his best girlfriend, you know, a pad if she needs it.
Right.
When she's, you know, at school. And
yeah, they're out in her bathroom, so I grab one for mine.
Exactly.
Right. No big deal.
Are you having trouble? Oh, let me go grab that for you.
Yeah.
That's the kind of, yeah, so it should be accessible.
On the other end of the spectrum, having gone to a conservative Christian high school, I know what our boys would have done with those. Goofed off.
Certainly.
We'd waste them and it'd be on the mirror. Like, we just goof off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
someone would stuff them in the toilet, and now, Yeah, it would just be.
Yeah, because boys are dumb.
Precisely. We'd just be idiots with them.
But what I'm trying to get at is that we, you know, women have been ousted for having, for the way that their bodies work forever. Yeah. And when I was, you know, younger, it was definitely the like, ew, gross, guys don't talk about that and don't talk about it in front of a guy. And, you know, oh, could you ask your dad to do this? Because your dad's going to be all grossed out at the, you know, store and embarrassed to buy whatever it is that you need. And like, that's a, to me, that's a moral failure. Yeah. Like, yeah. If you are unable to support your kid in the time that your kid needs you, that's the failure. And instead of like pretending like these are only, you know, girls' issues, pretending like there aren't, there wouldn't be a reason for someone in a boy's bathroom to need a tampon or a pad, like just acting like people don't exist doesn't mean they don't exist. Right. You know, like, why would we not make life easier for people in moments that we can? And this is such a very, not small in the way of insignificance, it's huge to me, but a very small thing to be teaching all kids that this is an important thing. Like, this is community at this point.
Right.
For people that aren't experiencing this, you can help the people that are experiencing this. And for the people that are boys that would need those products in a boy's bathroom, they don't have to have any of the embarrassment of,
right,
you know, trying to, one, you're going to yell at me if I go into the girls' bathroom to get it, right? And if I go to the nurse to try and get it, maybe that nurse is going to tell me no, because there's no reason that you, a boy, would need these things.
Right.
Like, it's the kind of fix to me that's like, okay, all these adults are really closed-minded, but we, these kids still need this stuff. So, like, how can we work around these closed-minded adults?
Right.
That's what this is to me. And it's not like there's an agenda behind it other than like be a good human and help the people that need the help. Like, if you don't have a period and don't need a period product, it being in the same room with you should
right.
not make you so confused that you can't understand what, how your body works anymore. Do I need this? Maybe I need this.
And here's the thing. If it does cause a level of confusion where you now have to have a conversation with your teacher, why are these in the boys' room? And it leads to a conversation that educates you.
Well, then you're going to get sued as a teacher because their parents are going to be like, you told my son he could be a girl. And now he thinks he's a girl. I can't get over the way that it's like, this is an agenda of some sort, and that it could ever work that way, that it could just be like the exposure to
yeah.
is enough.
Yeah.
And now I've never had any of these thoughts, but boy, am I thinking about it now.
Yeah.
And maybe I just need to change my whole entire life and make it very hard for something that I don't even know if I want. It's just like available. It's so just not how it goes.
Education through osmosis. Sure.
There were so many people saying that this is like, you know, again, an agenda of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And let kids be kids. They don't need to learn about sex. They don't need to learn about, you know, gender. Let kids be kids. And I don't know what your, I mean, I know, I do know what part of your upbringing was. And you were not nearly as experimental as me and my friends. No one had to tell us who we were attracted to for us to be attracted to people. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know where we, as you get older, your brain scrambles and you're like, oh no, there's a gay couple kissing. My son's going to be gay now. Like, no one had to tell us. And it's
right.
the people that are like having babies in their teens. And no shade, but my point
Zero
is,
shade.
If you was, who was it that made you become sexually active as a heterosexual person? What was it? Was it the heterosexual agenda?
Yeah.
That made you have unprotected sex and have a child in middle school?
You know it.
Oh, do I though?
Those, because those hetero teachers.
Always talking about it.
Birds always, and bees.
Always talking about their husbands and wives.
Yeah. Picture of their family on their desk. Come on.
It's just, y'all gotta be better.
Yeah. Yeah.
The self-reports are nuts. They're just nuts. We are doing a lot today.
We are.
Almost 8:30.
We are.
Alex is going to be here in 15 minutes. We got a whole story about these big, huge money interests that are trying to steal our elections. What?
So
I was trying to give a Trump quote.
Rudo popped up.
What up, Rudo?
All caps, a bunch of A's. Flatliners. Flatliners was no joke.
No joke. Ruined my life. Ruined my life.
And then we got another text. I bought a house in 1985 for 1 year's salary at an average mid-level manager state job. The house is now worth more than 7 times the median annual wage.
Right.
I could not afford to move the past 20 years if I wanted to. I'm probably here until they wheel me out.
So, yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. That one of my aunts was purchased a house, I think, in like 87, 88, something like that.
Mm.
That is now like no one would be able to buy that house in our family. You know,
right.
Like tiny little house in Alameda that just the lot alone.
Yeah, the land.
If she sold this house and made a gabillion dollars mm-hmm. from selling that house, it would immediately be torn down and
either
a humongous brand new, you know,
mm-hmm. three-story
flat
duplex.
Roof situation would be there.
Yeah.
Or it would be I don't even know that they could zone-wise have multifamily homes on that block. But that whatever they could do to maximize that space and forget that backyard that has been, you know, the only thing that keeps her sane, that's what they would do.
Yeah.
But she could never afford to move at this point. Never.
That is incredible.
She couldn't afford to move to rent. You know what I mean? Like when your mortgage becomes something that is you can pay that because you got it at like the text says, a year's salary.
In 85. Wowzers.
It just was able. You were able to live. You were able to buy a house.
That same person shot us another text where we were talking about what's happening in Massachusetts. I have no idea how I would live if I was coming up now. It's scary as hell. Yeah. I feel for these kids, man. I really do.
Because they also have so much access to the internet that there are conflicting messages at all times, right? Like you could mm-hmm. find community with other queer people on the internet. But then you've got your actual physical family telling you that you're like demonic or something.
Right.
You know, like, I can't. I just, as a parent also, cannot imagine treating my children just so mean. It's just mean. It's cruel.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine trying to make someone else's life hard, harder than it's going to be.
I try to remind people in my circle, less open-minded people in my circle, especially that want to be really vocal on the internet. There are members of your family that are watching you be monsters out loud.
Yes.
So good luck with that.
No, like your kids that you're saying you're protecting, they know that you're not safe for them.
Yeah.
They know that they can't go to you for protection or for help. Like I was talking to our kids the other day and I said, I was, you know, scared to death of my parents in many ways. Like, mm-hmm. There are irrational things that, you know, we are scared of the authorities and all of those things in our lives. But, like, my mom was always trying to get me to tell her everything so that she could help me or, you know, help navigate situations. And for whatever reason, I didn't trust that all the time. Mm-hmm. And I was scared. And there were multiple times where I was in situations where I really could have used my dad. I really could have used my mom. And they weren't my call.
Mm-hmm.
And I told our kids, like, I want us to be your call. I don't want you to be scared of our reaction to whatever action you have just done, or why you think you or why you are in any sort of trouble right now. I don't want you to be scared of us. I want us to be the safest part.
Yeah.
So you're in trouble in any way, you know, you can always call mom and dad. You can always, we will come get you. We will do, you know,
we want you safe.
Yeah. And we can talk about bad decisions later, but like, I want you safe, and I want you to know that you have people that are going to show up for you.
Yeah.
That's the kind of parent I want to be. And I know that there's going to be times that they're never going to call us, you know,
yeah.
And that's not going to be a thing, but I'm trying to build that so that they understand now being in an unsafe situation and then being scared of how the people that could help you would react to that puts you in even unsafer situations, because now you're looking for other ways to get yourself out of this jam. And we've all watched that movie, you know,
right?
We've all watched it. And now all of a sudden you fell off the side of the building. I don't need it.
Yep. I was like, I want
my kids around, guard. You know, that's it. And I want your kids around, and I want all the kids to be able to be safe, and I want them to get to grow up, as who they are.
Yeah, most importantly.
Because it's hard enough with supportive parents to be able to figure things out. It's hard enough. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be a parent that actively stifles and hurts your children? No.
Yeah.
No. All right, we've done none of the news. So, I don't know. Are we fired? How does this work?
No.
Does Nebraska tell us we can't come back?
As far as the Texas are concerned, we're batting 1,000 over here.
Are we?
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Malcolm, for chiming in. Good morning, Morgan and Ambush. Did y'all hear about the professor at Shawnee State in Ohio who refused to use a student's preferred pronouns on the grounds of religious freedom? The university settled for $400,000.
Mm. Show me, what's the religion?
Yeah.
What's the religion that you can't use pronouns? I want to see that in the book.
Which testament is that? Old, New Testament. Which book?
New. Is it the newest testament? Was it written by Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh? What's the verse?
The Book of Beck. Where is it?
Show me where it says you can't use pronouns in your religion. Because you can certainly do sirs and ma'ams, I bet.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you can do that.
Mm.
Tell me where it says anything in your book.
Y'all wild.
$400,000. Fantastic. Also, should have been more money, because these people need to understand. They only catch it.
Yeah. When it costs. Yeah.
Should have been more money.
Yeah.
But shout out to that person for getting their $400,000. Those professors, they do in fact need to lose their jobs.
Yes.
And the reason they need to lose their jobs is if you worked at Jamba Juice and you were the supervisor and you did the same thing, you would lose your job.
Immediately. There's no way you could cost that company $400,000.
And you just chilling.
Nah.
Because that professor will do it again, and it just matters if the person who it is done to says anything.
Yep.
Like, in every other instance, you're going to lose your job. Okay, I'll be quiet.
No, it's quite all right. Jumping into some local news here. The FBI warns of a rise in sextortion crimes targeting teen boys. Yikes. Portland's FBI field office has warned of an increase in so-called sextortion crimes targeting teenage boys throughout the country. According to the FBI, adults will make contact with young boys through online platforms such as social media or video games. A predator might pretend to be a young girl in order to convince the teen boys to partake in sexual activity over video. The FBI warns that predators then record that activity and use it to blackmail the boys. FBI Portland Special Agent in Charge, Kieran L. Ramsey, calls it, quote, a true example of how dire and disgusting criminals can be. Some tips the FBI provided to stay safe include, be vigilant about what you share online, be suspicious of new people you meet on the internet, encourage children to report suspicious behavior to a trusted adult.
Oh, they can't do that because my trusted adult is a teacher that just got fired for saying it's okay to be queer.
Booyah.
Sorry, I'll be quiet.
In 2021, the FBI says the Internet Crime Complaint Center received over 18,000 sextortion-related complaints.
Okay, Ambush, I know that we have to be very quick about this because Alex is going to come on, and I just want to say that I ran into, for Unrefined Sophisticates, I produced that show, right?
Which airs every Tuesday here on X-Ray FM.
And I am consistently looking for, like, kind of, you know, random things that were, you know, would be an easy, short thing to chat about. And I saw a story about this, and just the word sextortion had me cracking up, so I definitely read it. And this was, like, 2 months ago, where, and I think it was in Utah, that boys are being targeted and... But the first, I'm sorry, the first one that I read was a man was targeted and blackmailed. And his response was like, LOL, show my family. I mean, it's not great, but like, okay, I'm not going to pay you any money for it.
Right.
Which felt like that's how men would respond to me. It was like, yeah, because they're like, I don't want to be embarrassed, but if, okay, you know, like, I'm not going to give you money for it. I feel like women are definitely going to be like, oh, my God, you can't. My dad could see that, or my, you know what I mean, would have a maybe be a little more quick to give over that cash. The way that this story has now unfolded as it being like a problem with young boys and that young boys are susceptible to this because they're so trusting and they want to please people. I don't know those young boys. I don't know those ones that are so trusting and want to please people, but I do know that young boys are definitely on their video games and on the internet and getting scammed by, you know, bots all the time.
All the time.
Staying hacked because you tried to look at some, you know, girl's profile and that girl is a
whole 58-year-old
man who's definitely in the basement and just getting credit card numbers.
Yep.
This is interesting that it is now in Portland and there is all these, you know, these cases of it. And I just, if you were talking to your kids about certain things that could happen online, they would be in a better place. But people are still worried to talk about their kids to their kids about anything. And then assuming that they're going to get certain educations at school, but then mad at the educations that they get at school that would actually life skill them in this moment.
Yeah. Like, get them all. Get them prepped.
There's too many parents that don't understand the internet for them to be the ones that explain the internet. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, my mom would never be able to explain to me that there would be a scam on the internet. I'm consistently trying to explain to that woman, quit answering your phone when you don't know this number because you stay getting some sort of
scam. Yeah. Nebraska makes a point. And believe, boys, when they come forward.
I found that interesting, too. That I just don't know that this would be a conversation if this was young girls getting sextorted.
I was going to mention that.
I just don't know. I mean, what were you wearing?
Yeah. Yeah.
What did you say to that person? And that's not, I mean, I get so upset, but that's not the kind of questions that the boys are getting.
Yeah. Oh, not at all. Not at all.
And it's just such a different approach. Oh, my gosh. I cannot believe Billy had to deal with this.
Yeah. I remember when we first started talking about this and I said, I could imagine young boys actually being embarrassed and being susceptible because there's that element of, you know, you got taken advantage of. You got took. Like,
sure.
Someone's playing you. Like, and again, with those, when you're much younger and the egos are such a huge part of
oversized,
your rationale. Yeah. Of your rationale. Oh, yeah. That can definitely put some young men in some compromising positions. I could understand.
Yeah, I don't mean to say mean to say that no one would be, you know, young kid would be upset by this or traumatized by it at all. I don't mean that. I mean broadly, generally.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just raising my eyebrow, and I'm gonna just keep watching this story, and because I got questions.
Yeah, definitely.
I got questions, and I wonder how the responses are going.
You got questions. We got another text from Malcolm. He said, "I wanted to make a correction. The professor sued the university because he was being reprimanded. The university settled with him for $400K rather than draw it out."
No. Excuse me, Malcolm.
That sounds like.
Am I to understand that there was a student who was asking a professor to use their preferred pronouns? The professor said no, and then went to the school and spoke to the manager and said, "I can't believe this student asked for this, and that you, as my employer, are going to try and make me enforce that. So I'm going to sue you." And then the school was like, "You right. Here's $400,000 so that we don't have to go to court." Malcolm, is that what I am to understand?
That is wild. Wow.
And so then that teacher still has a job, and those students are still exposed to that level of bigotry. And those students pay for that bigotry. Like they go into deep amounts of debt in order to be exposed to that kind of bigotry.
Right.
Is what you're telling me. And then the school used some of that money and paid that teacher $400,000 and was like, "Don't worry about it. Just,
It's on us. Our bad."
Okay. That is a big difference from what I was understanding before. I hope Alex is here because I don't want to talk about that anymore.
Yes.
I need.
Yeah. Well, here to talk about the spicy Washington County DA race that is taking aim at Portland is the news editor for Portland Mercury, Alex Zielinski. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning. How are you guys?
We're great.
We are doing pretty good. I have a question before you get started, though.
Yeah.
What was your favorite Raffi song as a child?
I love that this lingers. Baby Beluga.
Thank you.
And I also have a stuffed animal that, like, my childhood stuffed animal that has, like, followed me to adulthood and is still in my, like, linen closet is a beluga whale.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Ambush did not know who Raffi was when I was explaining just how famous you are now for being retweeted by Raffi. And so I said, he was like, I don't know what you mean. And I was like, Baby Beluga? You don't know this? Number one hit?
Chart topper?
This chart topper?
You either don't know it all or you do and you adore.
Yes.
So it's kind of...
Well, that's where I was.
Polarizing debate. But yeah, it's a banger.
It is a banger.
Yeah.
We're getting some static on your phone. Is there...
Let me move around a little bit. I'm not sure if it's useful at all.
Because I want to hear this whole Washington DA race story real clear.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to ask about Hamilton, actually.
Am I clearer?
A little.
Okay. Sorry. Not sure. So Washington County DA race. It's one of the few contested district attorney races in Oregon that we've seen in a while. It's pretty standard for DA races to go uncontested or just not, you know, cause that much drama. But in recent years in Washington County, this has been a pretty kind of contested seat. Mm-hmm. Currently, the DA in office, his name is Kevin Barton. He skews conservative. He's been there for 4 years, and he wants to keep holding on to that office for 4 more years.
Mm.
And his argument against his opponent in this race, who is a former public defender and also a former federal prosecutor, is that if you elect, you know, his opponent, you will allow Washington County to turn into Portland. without necessarily defining what that means to him. You know, like, what is that synonym?
Right.
But it'll just turn into Portland and, like, kind of a wink and a nod at everyone being like, you know, like,
you know what
terrible.
I mean.
Mm. And that's because his opponent has pretty much for one single reason, which is Brian Decker, his opponent, this former defense attorney and prosecutor, he was part of an organization that supports, you know, Washington County. I forget the exact acronym, but it's like a Washington County-based kind of racial justice group and criminal reform group that formed, you know, in 2020, like a lot of organizations that sprouted out at that time. And its central message, at least one of its kind of rallying calls, was to defund police, you know, divest in prosecutors and jails, kind of moving away from the carceral system. And so Kevin Barton, the current DA, has used that, basically has directly linked this organization's point to his opponent, saying these are all things that Brian Decker believes. Brian Decker wants to fund the office he is running for. He wants to tear down the jails. He wants to turn Washington County into Portland, which, I mean, these aren't things that he said at all. This is just something that's been on a website that he has helped found. He is, you know, Brian Decker, the opponent, is very supportive of whittling away these big ballooning budgets for the criminal justice system, putting it towards kind of front end programs that help people prevent them from entering that system, you know, social services and healthcare and education. But in the current DA's eyes, that is, you know, the same as saying defund the police. And, you know, we've seen this across the country in the past couple of years, is the whole quote defund movement has been really villainized by the far right.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people are seeing this, like, villainization of Portland and of defunding as kind of a dog whistle to the far right. You know, this is a nonpartisan elected office. So it's not, you know, Kevin Barton isn't out and out as a Republican.
Right.
He hasn't said that. But it is. The campaign he has is like a strong kind of nod towards some far right rhetoric and towards some signaling that's saying, hey, we don't want to become Portland. We don't want to bring in some radical DA like the one in Multnomah County that's, you know, ruined everything. it's pretty remarkable how little substance there is to kind of the campaign conversation at the same time. Like, whenever there's a debate or whenever there's a forum discussion, instead of talking about policy or like changes or anything like that, it just lands in, well, my opponent wants to defund the police. So, you know,
yeah. Don't be
and
like,
it's remarkable
Portland.
to see Portland being put on this pedestal as like the worst case scenario. I mean, there are, you know, a couple thousand people who live in Washington County who are also Portland residents.
Yeah, hello.
Which, you know, which I feel like aren't going to be seen by this campaign that Kevin Barton's pushing, because Washington County is already Portland in some ways.
Yes.
but it's more or less the idea of like Portland's kind of anti-cop vibe crossing the county line and bleeding into Washington County, which, you know, is notoriously known as a really tough on crime county. Like, if you want to commit a crime, it's always recommended you do that in Multnomah County, not Washington County.
Right.
You know, you go straight to jail for even the smallest misdemeanors, and they're really, the sentencing in that court system is pretty serious, and there really isn't much space for any kind of restorative justice or these ideas that the opponent in this VA race, Brian Decker, has really raised and is seems to be really ruffling feathers of the incumbent.
It's always tough on crime has always been a dog whistle to me, even when, you know, doesn't matter who uses it, Republican or Democrat, it's always a dog whistle. It's always a dog whistle to the far right, no matter what. And I just don't know how we haven't gotten that clear to other people yet. You know, like, it's just, it's a way to be able to be like, I will put everybody in jail that you don't like.
Right.
It's the things, the things you don't like.
Clear, he hasn't said that he is a tough on crime guy, but his whole, the whole like posturing is very much in line.
I mean, if so, Portland if Portland is the, you know, extreme
crime ridden,
the crime ridden Gotham City
and, with their Antifas running around.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're saying it without having to say it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, that's something that a couple of people pointed out to me when I was working on this story is that, you know, either Kevin Barton knows what he's doing and is using this language to really like signal to folks in the kind of more conservative pockets of Washington County that like, hey, I know what you're thinking. I'm in the same boat. Don't worry. And, you know, kind of signal to, in some way, like the far right. Or he has no idea what he's doing, which is still deeply concerning as the top prosecutor of a major county. Like, you should know that your words are going to be impactful in that way. And that, especially years after, you know, seeing the Proud Boys come to Portland and using Portland as a playing ground for kind of their squabbles and also just accusing Portland of being, I mean, the way that Kevin Barton talks about Portland is not unlike the way that far-right groups talk about Portland.
Yeah, it's on fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uncontrolled, unfettered crime.
So it'll be interesting to see if that, I mean, I do think there is a population of Washington County who's maybe not gone to Portland in the past couple of years and has just seen the headlines on nightly news and has seen, you know, the growing crime rate and that they've heard rumors of their, you know, a neighbor told them that their car was broken into last time they went to Portland and, you know, just things that add up. And then they see someone who's saying, hey, we're not going to become Portland. And I think there is going to be a base there that will support him. It is kind of, I mean, it's very much a, this is not like a new technique to be in the suburbs and to say, we're not going to turn, you don't want to become the city, the metropolis next door.
Right.
You don't want your kids playing in the cul-de-sac and then suddenly there's a homeless person or person of color walking in the street.
Gasp.
Right.
Yeah. Before we go, is Kevin, so I think I remember him saying that, you know, Measure 11 is really important and keeps us safer and to repeal it would be, you know, to be opening ourselves up to, I don't know, more of the crimes, I guess.
Right.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. His basic, like, political beliefs are very, I mean, it's the tough on crime thing. It's Measure 11 is important, which is the mandatory minimum kind of sentencing policy in Oregon that treats a lot of youth as adults and arrests them and incarcerates them as adults in the adult system. And same with like a lot of the more, I don't know, progressive policies like Measure 110, the one that decriminalizes small amounts of drugs. And he says that he's a big fan of quote unquote responsible reform. is an interesting way to like pander to the pro reform crowd without saying I'm a reformer, you know?
Yeah. Because I'm not making any promises.
Right. It's just responsible.
Being responsible with it.
So there is, there are certainly a lot of, pro locking folks up for a long time, especially young people. assets in his portfolio.
Thank you, Alex. We definitely are going to keep our eye on this, because it's the quote that I read from the Mercury was, he said something to the effect of like, I'm not causing any division. Those leaders in Multnomah County are crazy.
Right. As if that's not how division is caused.
Not at all.
So we got to keep our eye on him, because he's
backing up. Like, he didn't really back up that statement either. And, you know, in the forum where I heard him say it, it was just kind of like, well, they're crazy. Next question. You know? as we all know.
Yeah.
Wow.
But there are people who believe with that and want to hear that. So we'll see. And like all elections, that one will take place May 17th. So stay tuned to hear how it pans out.
Yeah. Yep.
Thank you, Alex.
Thanks,
Alex.
We
so appreciate you finding time for this small little show as the famous woman you are now.
That was Alex Zielinski, news editor of the Portland Mercury. Thank you, everyone that did text and join the conversation today. Thank you ever so much. And remember, poverty is a policy choice. We'll catch you next week.
Bye.